The following message was recorded at the No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission.
Thanks, guys. I'm bringing this apple up here not for a mid-talk snack. I'll get to this in a moment. I like visual aids. I know some of you recognize me from 33, the series. I think we got a photo of the rest of the team, John Bryson and Brian Carter. We're all pastors of churches. Brian, when we started 33, was in his 30s. He's pastor of a church in Dallas. John Bryson was in his 40s. He's pastor, one of the teaching pastors at Fellowship Bible Church Memphis, an urban church. Actually, Crawford Loritz's son. Brian Loritz is the lead pastor there, so we got that connection. And then I'm the seasoned white guy from the suburbs, okay? So that's 33. So you may know me from that, but you may not know that I was an extra in a Chuck Norris film. It all happened by accident, okay? I got this this phone call, and I knew immediately, man, this is a wrong number. Because the person said, hey, this is Katrina Casting, and your name is on a list of extras for a new Chuck Norris film. And I said, boy, did you call the wrong number. I said, but I was living in the Dallas area at the time, and you know that's where they were filming it. And I said, hey, I got a few days off. Let me know if I can help. She said, we need some bodies. I said, I'm there for you. So I showed up at this farmhouse in Grand Prairie, Texas, and I got to be an extra in a Chuck Norris film. It was a terrible script. I think his son, Mike, wrote it. It was about these missionaries who were taking Bibles to Mexico. And the plane crash-landed in this West Texas town that was overrun by Satan worshipers. Chuck Norris was this angelic figure. He had angel powers. And I got to be a minion. Not the little yellow guys with the goggles. I mean, I'm talking wearing gauze and a robe, carrying a torch, running through a field, yelling at Chuck Norris, okay? And so you're probably never going to see this. I put together a little slideshow of screenshots. I call it Tierce and Chuck Make a Movie. Tierce and Chuck Make a Movie. There I am. That's me. I know it's hard to see me, so I put titles, okay? The next one. That's Chuck, obviously. I'm running towards him right now. Next one. Okay, this guy, there's me right there in the back. Okay, next shot. Chuck again, close up. Okay, next one. Okay, there's that space shuttle pilot in the Bruce Willis Armageddon movie. Remember him? He's the one that crashed and died. And then next one. Close up of me. There it is. Can you see me? All right. Now, if you don't believe me, look at the credits, okay? There's Chuck. He gets top billing, but then look at the next one. Minions, do you see it? Do you see it? Thank you very much. Man, I don't know how many man credits I get for that, but there you go. One thing I do know about manhood is this. I am a work in progress, especially when it comes to being a husband and a father. My wife and I have been married 28 years. I'm still figuring this thing out. I really am a work in progress. I was down in the Tampa area, and they were doing a 33 kickoff and a big pig roast. So they roasted this whole hog underground with coals, you know, and stuff, brought it out on a surfboard. And then they had displayed the head of this thing. Let me show you a picture of it. The head of this thing with, an apple in his mouth. Well, we did that at our wedding rehearsal, my wedding rehearsal. We had a whole hog. We had a pig head, you know, with its sunglasses. So I'm thinking, man, this is awesome, you know. So I'm just about to text this photo to my wife. And without even thinking, I'm texting, thinking of you. And I stopped and went, oh, no, delete, delete, delete. Yeah. And then I came up with something like, hey, this reminds me of our wedding rehearsal. I love you today more than ever, you know, and it got thumbs ups and kisses, you know. Guys, the wheels almost came off. I just want you to know that I am a work in progress. Whenever I speak to groups of men like this, I like to say, welcome to the construction zone. We are all works in progress. Sometimes, especially when we're talking about some difficult manhood issues, I like to say you may need a hard hat for this one because we're not going to pull any punches. Because I'm all about disrupting conventional manhood. Conventional manhood. Disrupting conventional manhood. That's the title of this talk. And that implies there's something wrong with conventional manhood. And it needs disrupting. And that's exactly the case. Conventional manhood basically says, if you go to school, get good grades, and then you get a job, and then you get a wife, and you get a mortgage, have some kids, get a, you know, sock some money away in a retirement portfolio, then when you retire, man, life is going to be full and meaningful and satisfying. Can I just tell you, that is a lie? God created us for much more than that. So we need to disrupt conventional manhood. I want us to start with something the Apostle Paul wrote to a church in Corinth, this first century church in Corinth. He's writing his letter, and then he gets to chapter 13. And if you've been around church for any length of time, you know 1 Corinthians 13, we tend to call it the what chapter? The love chapter. It's almost as if we think Paul, you know, is writing his letter, he finishes chapter 12, and he's thinking, huh, you know, I need to write something people can read it at their weddings. That's not why he wrote this, okay? In fact, his whole letter is to try to straighten out what had gotten so crooked. This church in Corinth looked more like the culture in Corinth than Christ. I mean, they were just babies. He said, you guys ought to be eating solid food, but you're still sucking on a bottle. So there's this theme running through 1 Corinthians. Come on, grow up. I mean, they were so twisted, they would take something as beautiful as the Lord's Supper, communion, and they would use it as a kind of a free-for-all picnic party, ignoring people who didn't have stuff, you know, just these little clique groups. So he's trying to address that. They would take something as beautiful and as powerful as the gifts of the Holy Spirit, and they turned them into, hey, man, my gift's better than your gift. And he's trying to correct all this. In 1 Corinthians 13, he says, look, whatever you're doing, if you're not doing it in love, you're just making a lot of noise. And then he gets to verse 11 of 1 Corinthians 13, says something a little unusual, talking about love, and then he says this. Look at it. He says, when I was a child, I talked like a child. Say that with me. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I reasoned like a child, but when I became a man, say that, when I became a man. One more time. When I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Hey, do you see it? There's that theme. Grow up. Stop sucking on a bottle. You ought to look different when you step into manhood. And you know what? I'm thinking he's addressing a lot of the men in this church in Corinth who are kind of MIA. They're just kind of passive. And he's saying, come on, guys. Turn this thing around. Turn this thing around. So I want to share with you some things today that I have learned, some things I'm still learning about what helps us as men grow up. What kind of things need to be in place? What kind of environment needs to be in place to create a culture where we can step into authentic, biblical manhood? Here's the first thing. Number one, men need a safe place where they know someone understands them and they are not alone. Men need a safe place where they know someone understands them and they know they're not alone. That realization can be so liberating because there are a lot of guys that think they're the only ones having the thoughts they're having. They're the only ones struggling with being the father they want to be. They think their son is unique. Their daughter is unique. And it's like, you don't understand me. They're the only ones they think is struggling with being the husband. And you get guys in a safe place, and they begin to crack open their chest a little bit. All of a sudden, they realize, man, I'm not alone. You begin to lock arms with one another, and you can help each other. I remember the first time I shared with a large group of men in my church my story, my good, bad, and ugly, not glorifying the bad in any way or the ugly, but talking about how God was gracious and redeemed me, and he's working, helping me work out my salvation. When I'm telling my story and opening up my chest, you could have heard a pin drop. They'd never really heard a pastor talk like that. And all of a sudden, it gave them permission to do the same thing. That was revolutionary for us, creating a safe place for men to discover they're not alone. C.S. Lewis said this. He said, true friendship begins when one person says to another, what? You too? I thought I was the only one. And guys, you need a safe place where you can do that. And I'm seeing that in various venues, many of them not in church venues, but out in the community, in businesses. And I've got a buddy who's in Lynchburg. Bob Miller is kind of an entrepreneur, and he owns a cigar shop, and he was inviting his friends to come to his church to learn how to be better men. Most of them didn't want to go there. He thought, well, I own this business. I can do whatever I want to. And so on Wednesday nights when he closes, he opens back up, and they'll have 40 men in there going through 33, learning how to be authentic men. Men need a safe place. Number two, men need a clear, compelling vision of biblical manhood. We need to clarify the target about what manhood really is. You know, if you don't know what the target is, if you aim at nothing, you're going to hit it every time. And with manhood, a lot of guys don't know what the target is. If you ask a guy, hey, man, what does it mean to be a man? They're just going to pull stuff out of the air and say, well, you know, when you turn 21. Well, you know, when you kill your first deer, or you crack open your first beer, or when you lose your virginity. I mean, they're all over the map, but a lot of guys do not know. They do not have a clear, compelling vision of biblical manhood. So they're just guessing. Hey, that was me through most of my young life. When I was a little boy, when I was 10, my father died. My mom never remarried. I grew up in a single parent home. Godly woman, I'm thankful for her, but I tell you, I didn't have a father in my house to model manhood for me. So you know what I did all through high school? Man, I just guessed. I guessed about how to treat a woman. I guessed about sex. I guessed about finances. And I felt just foolish because I usually guessed wrong. And so a lot of men need a clear, compelling vision of biblical manhood. Number three, men need time with other men to effectively process their manhood. Hey, guys, I love this conference. This is my first experience. This is outstanding. Probably one of the best, top three that I know of in this country. And so well done for being here. But let me tell you, just being here, sitting in the seat, taking notes, that's huge that you're doing that, but you're just gathering information. There's something more that needs to happen. We need to process our manhood. Okay? We use a verse a lot with men's ministries. It's from Proverbs. It says, as iron sharpens iron, so what? One man sharpens another. Well, this is not, here's how it's not supposed to work. You don't take all the little pieces of iron and sit them in seats looking at an auditorium listening to a guy talk. The only way iron's going to sharpen iron is this. Watch this, guys. You press it together and rub it. That's the only way iron sharpens iron. And so for us to process our manhood, we need more than these little transactional drive-bys where we're sharing information, data transfer, where we're just talking on the surface, you know. You know, how about them Packers? How about them Vikings? Whatever. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. We just need to go deeper than that. But usually we can't get off our phones, you know. We just kind of, hey, man, how's work? Fine. How's the family? Fine. You know, okay, see you. Next time you meet, same conversation. About that deep. And we can have all kinds of stuff going on in us that we're covering up, and we cover it up with two words. I'm fine. Yeah, that's conventional manhood, isn't it? Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, just give me the usual. Go to church, clock in, clock out. But man, we need environments where we feel safe, where we can process our manhood. Guys, I always tell guys whenever I'm doing any series, whatever it is, I say, look, the goal is not just to fill in the blanks in your training guide. The goal is to let God begin to fill in the blanks of our life. Listen, this conference is not about behavior modification. It's about transformation. This is not about give me 10 steps to be a better man. Even though you might take those 10 steps, but what it ought to do is to drive you to your knees in humility. God, I cannot do this apart from a relationship with you. See, if all we do is transfer information, if it stops in our head, that's just information, okay? At best, we're just a modern-day Pharisee. We know a lot of stuff. We're even maybe religious about it, but that's it. Information, Pharisees. If it makes it to our heart and we, you know, I'd call that inspiration. We feel inspired, man, I can do this. But if that's where it stops, you're just a fanatic. It needs to go from our heart, the information, to our head, inspiration, down to our feet and our hands. And I call that incarnation, Christ in you. That's what a disciple is. But we cannot do that in some hermetically sealed room just taking notes. Man, we got to process life. We need time to do that. So, number four, men need practical how-tos to help them taste success. How-tos. How do you take the timeless biblical principles and connect the dots with real life? I'm now part of a church plant. We're about 6 years old, and one of our values is man, just biblical truth. We teach through the Bible. We're going through the book of Mark now, chapter by chapter, verse by verse. I love that about our church, but you know what a growth area for us is? We have a lot of people who have a lot of Bible knowledge, but a big growth area is the practical application. So we don't just stop with, I know the Bible, but how do I apply that? That's one of the things we do with 33 is, okay, here's what the Bible says, and here's how we apply it. We need practical how-tos. Number five, men need male cheerleaders to encourage them. Hebrews chapter 3, 13 says, encourage one another daily so that none of you may become hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Man, if you don't have other guys cheering you on, your heart can get hardened. You need guys that you've given permission to speak into your life, to hold you accountable. Do you have some guys like that? Some friends like that, a cheerleader, to say, hey, listen, what you're going through? Yeah, man, it's tough. I've been through a similar thing, but you know what? Here's how I got through it. Or to maybe have a guy who say, you know, I went through what you went through, and I crashed and burned, but by God's grace, here's how he restored me, and I'll show you how he can do that for you. You need some cheerleaders to encourage you. Number six, men need a plan of action that they can put on paper and in the hands of other men. There's something about writing it out and giving it to a friend that you trust, and then saying, man, come on, you know me. Here's what I think God wants to do in me. Now you tell me, am I just blowing smoke with this? Do I need to modify this? And then you work it out together, your strategic action plan, and then you say, okay, I want you to hold me accountable. I want you to ask me how I'm doing on this. I've seen more transformation in my life when you submit yourself to God working in you and through you and through a friend to hold you accountable. It's beautiful, that plan of action. And finally, number seven, men need to understand that life is mapped out in seasons. They need to know how to transition well through each season. Life is more than just, you know, spring, summer, fall, and winter. It's back to back to back to back to back seasons. I mean, it's all mashed together. There's life after 20, life after 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80. And you need to figure that out. Life's going to look real different from your teen years when you're looking back from your 20s and your 30s. Life is real different when you transition into your 40s. So you need to understand that, and you need to anticipate those transitions. Let me give you some key ideas of the seasons of a man's life. The first one is the idea of reverse engineering. Reverse engineering. This is a principle that countries would use in warfare. If you can acquire the enemy's weapon and reverse engineer it, if you can figure out how it works, then it's going to give you an advantage. Corporate warfare, same thing. You know, find the competition's product and you can reverse engineer it, maybe make it better, make it your own, you know. I've always, from when I was little, I used to always love to take things apart and try to put them back together. Well, from a manhood perspective, you know, I have some men in my life who've influenced me. Not my dad, because he was absent when he was alive, then he died, but some other father figures. My brother-in-law, who's 12 years older than me, a retired postman in Alabama, man, I keep reverse engineering him. I just watched him recently. My sister had a stroke about 4 years ago, and she lost a big part of her brain. She's able to move around, but, man, she asked the same question 10 times in a day, and I'm watching my brother-in-law love her and die to himself and care for her and be gracious. Man, I'm looking at that saying, oh, God, I want to be like that. I want to be like that. Vernon McCurry in Greenville, South Carolina. When I was a student pastor in my early 20s, I got to live with Vernon and his family the last 3 months of my tenure there. And he had two sons, Paul, who was at Clemson University, and Jerry, who was still in high school. Vernon and Peggy McCurry. And man, the way he loved his wife and loved and led his boys. I remember those conversations sitting out on his deck, and Vernon was a pipe smoker, and he'd have his pipe and his Bible open, and whenever I smell a pipe, man, it just takes me back to that wonderful time here's a man who loved his family and loved God and was applying his principles. I'd watch him sneak up behind his wife and dip her in the kitchen and kiss her. It was a little creepy at the time, you know, watching him kind of, you know, go at it, but I thought, man, I want to love my wife like that. That's Vernon. Do you have some guys that you can reverse engineer? I tell you, they just didn't become the godly men they are today overnight. They made strategic decisions all through every season of life. They learned how to handle their successes and their failures well. Those are the guys you need to identify and reverse engineer. Are you the kind of man that other men can reverse engineer? What would they find? You might say, well, man, I'm not perfect. Hey, none of us are. But how have you handled your imperfections? Has it driven you to the cross? Do you respond to God through all that? Reverse engineering. Key idea number two, the laws of the harvest. The laws of the harvest. You know, Galatians tells us a man will reap what he sows. And so the three laws of the harvest are: we reap what we sow, we reap more than we sow, and we reap in a different season than we sow. We reap what we sow. Hey, if you want apples, you better plant apple seeds. You better choose your seeds wisely because you're going to reap what you sow. But not only that, you reap more than you sow. If I asked you, hey, how many seeds are in this apple? Well, that's easy. Just give me a knife. We'll slice it open, count the seeds, right? But if I were to pick up one of those seeds and say, okay, guys, how many apples are in this seed? Well, you'll have to plant it. It's going to be more. You're going to reap more than you sow. So whatever you sow, good, bad, or ugly, you're going to reap more than you sow. And the third part of the laws of the harvest are we reap in a different season than we sow. This is hard for us because we want quick fixes. We want to go through the drive-thru and get the Happy Meal. But man, it's a lifetime. We are works in progress. What I learned in my 20s, man, I saw it differently in my 30s and 40s and so on. And so you're going to reap in a different season. So be patient. Scripture tells us in Galatians chapter 6, don't grow weary in well-doing. In due season you will reap if you don't give up. So, man, don't give up. Don't look for quick fixes. Look for healthy, sustainable growth. A third key idea of the seasons of a man's life are to anticipate transitions. Don't react. Be proactive. Anticipate transitions. For you. For you, okay? Because you don't be caught off guard or you're gonna be reactionary instead of being a good responder. Anticipate transitions for your wife. Guys, I don't know if you are married to a woman who's about to go through menopause or is right in the middle of it. Man, you need to anticipate that. You need to huddle up with a guy who's been down that road, or you're going to think your wife is possessed. You're going to think she can't be saved, man. You're going to walk in and I wonder who's on the other side of that door today. Okay, well, you need to anticipate that, or you're going to say, forget this, I'm out of here. You have to realize, man, that's just part of life, all right? For your wife especially and yourself, if you're about to enter the empty nest stage season, okay, you need to anticipate that. Because especially if you had a lot of kids and you've just been shuttling them all over town from sport event to ballet to whatever, whatever, all of a sudden they're gone and your attention has been outward to your kids and now it's just you and your wife and it's like, who are you? And you're going to have to learn how to kind of fall in love all over again in a different season of life. You need to anticipate that. Hey, and leading your kids, you need to anticipate transitions for them. When they're little, you're kind of like their coach, all right? You just blow the whistle. Do this, don't do this. Brush your teeth, take a bath. Why? Hey, I'm your dad. Just do it, okay? But once they begin to kind of get a little older, begin to start to enter those teenage years, no hard and fast date, just as they begin to, you need to switch from blowing the whistle all the time. Sometime, yeah, but not all the time. You need to put the whistle down because now you're going to transition into be more like a counselor. And a counselor, you need to just pay attention for teaching opportunities. We just finished volume 6 of 33, A Man and His Fatherhood, and one of the key learnings, man, for me. Hey, by the way, I'm in the winter season of life, and I've got an 11-year-old daughter. And so, man, I'm absorbing all this. And one of the key learnings was, as dads, we've got to not just connect with their behavior, but with their heart. If all you're doing is trying to make them behave correctly, they may go through their teenage years compliant to your instructions, but when they leave, they'll do whatever they want to, man. You got to connect with their heart. So you got to stop blowing the whistle, do this, don't do that. Put it down. Learn to connect with their heart. Be a counselor. Help them understand who God is, who Jesus is, that they should follow Him and not just do what you tell them to do. But here's why. And then something happens toward the end of their teenage years. They begin to go off to college. And now you're not so much a counselor as you are a consultant. And a consultant doesn't just hop on a plane and fly in and start consulting. You wait to be invited. It is painful. You know? I know when I left to go to college, my single mom, she told me this later. She prayed. She said, God, I know that my influence, most of it is done would you cross my boy's path with some other people who can help him, who can remind him of what I've said? And so she was wise in that. She was more of a consultant. So coach to transition to counselor to consultant, and then an amazing thing happens if you've done your job well. One day you're going to be sitting at a table with you and some of your contemporaries, and maybe your son or your daughter's at the table, and you listen to them and look at them, and they're like colleagues now. They're colleagues. Because as dads, our role is not to raise children. Our role is to raise adults that are confident in love with Jesus, and you need to help them to anticipate those transitions. Hey, let me do this for you. I want to give you kind of an overview of the seasons of a man's life. We talk about this in volume 1 of 33, and so I'm not going to cover all that. Let me just give you a big picture. Four seasons, the spring, summer, fall, winter. The spring season is about birth to 20. About, okay? Not hard and fast, but definitely birth to about 20. The spring season is all about identity. Identity, coming to terms with who you are. And just as importantly, coming to terms with who you are not. You need to figure out how God has wired you so you can major on the majors and minor on the minors. It reminds me of some of the early episodes of American Idol, when you have all these people who think they can sing. And you know, they're horrible, man. And they don't make it to the next round. And then they're being interviewed afterwards, and they say the cliches. You know, I just believe if I believe hard enough, I can be a good singer, man. I can do this. And I'm listening, and I'm thinking, no, you can't. And somebody needs to love you enough to tell you that, you know. Now, this doesn't mean that you shouldn't dream big, but, man, you need to figure out who you are and who you're not. And the spring season is all about that. The biggest challenge in the spring season is transitioning into adulthood well. Transitioning into adulthood well. So that's the spring, birth to about 20. The summer is about 20 to about 40-ish. And it's all about learning and growing. You begin to focus on how am I wired, what's my passion, what's my career, and man, you learn all you can. Be the best you can be. And then you begin to grow. The first half of this season, the 20s, is about learning. The second half is really about growing. The big challenge for the summer is getting lost in extended adolescence. Yeah, that's a phenomenon we've seen. You know, sociologists, man, they're baffled. A lot of people call it the Peter Pan syndrome. Some people call it, you know, boys who shave. There's a big thick book called Guyland. Not a whole lot of men, just guys, you know. And so a lot of these people who get trapped in extended adolescence, a lot of the parents kind of helped them do that. Helicopter parents always flying in, rescuing them, bailing them out. You got a lot of men in this season of life, they don't even know how to balance their checking account. They don't know how to take responsibility, and so they need to transition into adulthood well. The biggest challenge is getting lost in extended adolescence. Another big challenge in this summer season, I mean, it's always going to be a part of our life as men, but it's especially hard here because this is when the hormones are pumping, man. It's handling sexual energy well. There's just something about this season, man. It's difficult. Look at what it says in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 3 through 5. It says, for this is the will of God, your sanctification. God created you to be set apart for something special, a holy purpose, that you abstain from sexual immorality. Men, does that say abstain from sex? No, it says abstain from sexual immorality. God created sex. That's a good thing. One of the funnest commandments had to be fruitful and multiply. Yes. So he's not saying abstain from sex, but abstain from sexual immorality, that each of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. Sexual immorality is taking this very good thing God created and twisting it and using it in a way that perverts it, a way that God never intended, dragging it outside of the boundaries of marriage. And especially in this season, in this summer season, that's going to be a big struggle. It'll always be a struggle as long as we have breath in our body, right? But especially here. And you've got to ask yourself, will I be a slave to it or will I control it in a whole way that's holy and honorable? In your 30s, the second half of the summer season, a key word for the 30s is margin. developing margin in your life because, man, you're learning and you're getting started in your career. You're working hard, and this is noble, man. This is noble. This can honor God. But if you don't have any white space on your calendar, then you know what suffers if you don't have margin? Relationships. Relationship with God, relationship with each other. You're just so focused, tunnel vision on your career that you just kind of are isolated. I'm still working on this. I'm getting a better handle on it. A few years ago, I was on my way home from a long day, and I lived about 20 minutes away from my office, and one of my habits is still to catch up on missed phone calls. Good use of time. But I had a bad habit of being on the phone when I pulled into the driveway, sometimes even in the garage, sometimes even walking in the house. So one day, my little girl was, I don't know, at the time, maybe 7. And so I'm on a phone call, and man, it's intense. I pull into the garage, and she's so excited, Daddy's home. She comes and knocks on the window. And I said, just a minute. And she goes and plays, and I'm still on the phone, man. I'm tunneled. And she comes back, knocks on the window again, and I said, just a minute. Daddy's on the phone. She goes away. Finally, third time, she comes back, knocks on the window. I roll the window, and I said, Anna, I'm on the phone. This is important. Go inside. I'll be in a minute. Didn't seem to really bother her, but, oh, man, I heard what I said. And I realized what I was doing. And I thought, I got to fix this. So I thought, I got to create a barrier. Okay, I'll be on the phone, but when I enter into the neighborhood, that'll be my barrier, my safe place, my safe zone. So whoever I'm talking to, I'll get off the phone. Well, that's a good idea, but the problem was I'm physically off the phone, but mentally I'm still on it. You guys know what I'm saying? Right, there's one man who came home from work, and the kids were excited to see him. Daddy, Daddy. And the wife said, kids, come here. Daddy's not home yet. And they said, uh-huh, he's right there. She said, we know he's home. He just doesn't know it yet. Give him about 20 minutes, and he'll be home. Smart wife. Really stupid husband. So I backed my barrier up. I thought when I crossed this street, man, I had to keep going back. Finally, it was about a 3-mile barrier. And whenever I crossed that barrier, whoever I'm talking to, I'd get off the phone. But more than that, physically off, mentally, I disciplined myself. I said, okay, now this morning, I know my wife had this and this. We prayed about that. My daughter had this and this and this. I need to ask them how those things went today. So when I walk in the door, I'm not just physically present, I'm mentally engaged. Now, guys, that's disciplining our body for the sake of godliness, making our body do what it should, not what it wants to, and with God's help and grace, man, you can do it. I'm not perfect at it. Sometimes I still mess up, but margin is key. And in your 30s, you need to start figuring that out. White space on your calendar. It's a beautiful thing. You know, in some churches, one of the things I've learned with men's ministries, I don't know how many pastors are here, but if we think that our role as pastors is to keep people busy, we could all retire because we got them pretty busy. I realized one season of teaching hundreds of men, we'd have like 1,200 guys come into this thing each season. And I'd be talking to 600 one night, 600 in the morning. And I just thought, man, this is great. But they don't have any time to do what we're challenging them to do. We'd do like 12 sessions in the fall and 13 sessions in the spring, even do a summer deal. So I started scaling it back to 6-week huddles, 6-week sets. And they said, what are we going to do? We're not meeting. I said, well, I'm going to give you 3 pathways. Some of you need this, a personal spiritual trainer. I've got a guy that can help you do that. Some of you need to take men through what just studied, and you need to lead courageously in that. Some of you need to be involved in these local and global missions. And I created space for them, margin for them, to relationally and ministry to engage. So there's spring, there's summer, there's fall, 40-ish to about 60. This is all about influence, man. You've picked the right seeds. You've sown them. Now you're reaping in a different season. There's this potential for this great harvest if you've cultivated these seeds well. The potential danger, though, is a midlife crisis. If you've not done so well in that, your identity, you begin to question it. Maybe your wife's not making you happy like she used to. You find someone who's kind of affirming you, who's not your wife, and man, you're a prime target for a midlife crisis. So you got to watch out there, and if it can creep up on you. The potential danger, the midlife crisis, the big question is this. Let's say you get to this fall season, and you look back, and you have some regrets. Man, I wish I'd done it differently. I hear that all the time. We teach in Principles of Manhood. I'll have guys in their 40s and 50s say, man, I wish I had known this in my 20s. I'm going, hey, me too. But you know what? We didn't. But now we do. By God's grace, let's take what we know and let's apply it. Let's seek forgiveness where we need to. And even in those mistakes, God can be glorified. God can be glorified. That's the fall. And finally, the winter season. That's about 60-ish plus. 60 till Jesus comes or you die. We call this the sage season. It should be marked by wisdom and respect. I'd add experience to that. Wisdom, experience, and respect. And so a lot of younger guys are drawn to you because they see something different in you. Not just a man who's been financially successful, but he's a guy who's managed his family well, his relationships well, and they want to know what makes you tick. They want to reverse engineer you. Do you get it? That's the winter season, the sage season. The major opportunity should be your flexibility. You know, there are a lot of men who are actually not going to be able to retire from working entirely. A lot of guys just will not have enough to be able to not clock in and clock out anymore. And so, but hopefully if you've managed your life well and you've downsized and you've got enough to give you a little more freedom to where you're not having to work so hard to pay the bills, you've got a lot more flexibility. And so you can leverage that flexibility. The big danger in the winter season is to buy this lie that you can no longer contribute. You know, in America especially, it's the retirement lie. Especially if you think retirement is conventional manhood. Unplugging, playing golf, waiting to die. Man, you'll die real quick if that's your idea. And so don't buy the lie that you can no longer contribute. That's one of the reasons I love environments where you're not just having the 20-somethings together and the 30-somethings together, but you got men in their 20s mashed together with men in their 60s, 70s, and 80s. My role at my new church plant is community and house church. We have house church environments. We have house church pastors who function as pastors. And those environments are, man, they're multi-generational. And people ask, well, which house church has 20s? You know, well, they all do. Which one's got, you know, empty nesters? Well, many of them do. And we just encourage them, sit in the room, do life with people who are just starting out and many who are at seeing the sun begin to set, because there's so much to learn when you're pressed in these environments. Man, I want to encourage you to do that. Oh, there's a lot of value to having some homogenous groups for specific times, but there's something beautiful about this winter season of wisdom and experience and respect. In Joshua chapter 14, Caleb says an interesting thing. He was one of the 12 spies God told the nation of Israel to select a committee of 12 to go into the promised land to check it out. So Caleb and Joshua were the two guys who could see things from God's perspective and really wanted to go on in, but most of them didn't. They were afraid of the giants. And so they had to spend about 40 years in the wilderness, you know. And now they're in the promised land. New leader is Joshua, and they're divvying up the promised land. And so here's Caleb. He was 40 when he went into the land as a spy. He's much older now. I want you to listen to what he says. It says in Joshua 14, verse 7, he says, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent me from Kadesh Barnea to explore the land. And I brought him back a report according to my convictions. But my brothers who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt with fear. I, however, followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. So on that day, Moses swore to me, the land on which you have set your feet have walked will be an inheritance, and that of your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God wholeheartedly. Verse 10, now then, just as the Lord promised, he has kept me alive for 45 years since the time he said this to Moses. So here I am today, 85 years old. I am still as strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I'm just as vigorous to go out to battle now as I was then. Now, give me this hill country that the Lord promised me that day. Hill country, what's that? Sound like a little cabin on a hill, watch the sunset? Oh, no. He says, you yourself heard that the Anakites were there, and their cities were large and fortified, but the Lord helping me, I'll drive them out just as he said. God, give me the hill country. There are giants up there. He's 85, wielding a sword. Man, I want to be like that, don't you? I want to die with a sword in my hand, don't you? Not just sitting back critiquing what everybody else is doing. That's what I want to do. That's what I want to do. Let me tell you what a grown man does quickly. Number one, he rejects passivity. Number two, he accepts responsibility. Number three, he leads courageously. And number four, he invests eternally. He rejects passivity. He's not passive like the Adam in the garden, that first man who stood there passive while his wife that God had given him to protect and lead is being tempted by the devil. She eats the fruit, and Scripture plainly says she gives some fruit to her husband who was right there with her. Totally passive. Strong, silent type. Caught with his pants down. Doing nothing. He accepts responsibility. Later, after they've messed up, they're trying to hide themselves, cover their sin. God seeks them out. Adam, did you eat of the fruit I told you not to? Notice, he didn't call Eve's name because Adam had the responsibility. He was the leader. Adam, did you do what I told you not to? Well, there's this chance to be responsible. Yes, God, I've sinned. God, please, I've messed up. What can I do to make this right? He's trying to spin it. What does he say? That woman you gave me. That's us, isn't it? It's never our fault, is it? She just doesn't understand me. I want to find somebody who does. She doesn't make me happy. Find somebody who, you know, it's my boss. He doesn't get me. You know, it's the current administration. Get somebody new in that White House. Yeah, buddy. It's always somebody else's fault. But we accept responsibility. We lead courageously. We invest eternally. That's what a grown man does. And who benefits when a man grows up? Number one, his wife feels loved and led. Number two, his children feel guarded and guided. And number three, his friends are challenged and they feel connected and his church is energized. Back in 2006, when I was pastor, one of the pastors at this mega church in the Woodlands, man, they'd have, 12,000 people coming on a weekend. It was huge. But they had this little Bible study for men called Iron on Iron, about 100 guys coming. You know, 100 guys, that's great. But that was like less than, 1% of the weekend attendance. So I got some men together and I said, we're going to do something different. We're going to help men figure out what it means to be a biblical man. And I said, how are we going to measure success? They threw out numbers. I said, well, I'd love to see hundreds of guys like you. I said, but it's got to be more than that. Here's what I want to see. I want to hear from their wives that their husband's leading them and loving them. I want to hear from their kids that their dad is doing more than just showing up for the ball games. That's a good thing. But man, the dad needs to have these spiritual conversations with the kids, connect with their heart. I want to hear that we've got more men volunteering for local and global missions. I want to hear that in our children's area, in our junior high and high school area, we got men who are volunteering because thank God for the women, but we don't have a whole lot of men. And just like me growing up, we need some father figures for these young men. And after we had put this in place and we had hundreds of guys come in, first year 700, next year 1,000, next year 1,200. Man, that was awesome. But you know what did it for me? I couldn't cross the atrium without some woman saying, Pastor Tears, Pastor, I got to tell you. Now, I'm not saying he was a bad man before, but let me tell you, I love this version of my husband. He's leading us spiritually. He's engaging with our kids. And I remember when our children's director came up to me and said, hey, Pastor Tears, check out this list. I said, what's this list? She said, these are the volunteers in our children's area. And I'm looking at the list, populated with men. That guy's been with us. That guy's been with us. And more men were initiating with local and global missions. Man, your church is energized. Your friends feel challenged and connected. Hey, guys, I'm going to close with this. When we finished volume one of 33, and you can check it out, authenticmanhood.com. I'm glad you guys, that's useful for many of you. And man, I'd love to have these conversations. My personal info is on the table. There's a card and let us know your stories. When we finished volume one, we asked Tadashi, a spoken word artist, if he could kind of write a piece that would capture our language of rejecting passivity and the seasons of a man's life and the faces of manhood, king, warrior, lover, friend. He put together something I think is pretty awesome. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to watch this video. I've got to go on to a breakout. But thank you very much for letting me be a part of what you guys are doing today.